Hey, y'all. It's the NPR Politics Podcast. We are coming to you with the first of four daily episodes from the Democratic National Convention here in Philadelphia. Bernie Sanders and Michelle Obama were the big speakers last night, but even before the convention got started, there was so much news. The leader of the Democratic National Committee resigned after about 20,000 hacked emails were posted online. And those hackers may have been the Russian government. I know, right? Election 2016. Anyway, we'll get into all of this. I'm Sam Sanders, campaign reporter.
I'm Asma Khalid. I cover demographics in the campaign.
Ron Elving, editor correspondent.
So where do we start?
I mean, where do we start?
I guess the first thing we should do right now is welcome our new listeners. We have a lot of new ones. Hi.
Hi, new listeners.
Thank you, guys.
Greetings.
You know, I ran into a couple of NPR Politics podcast listeners at the convention.
It's been nice.
We always take selfies.
Yeah. It's been both conventions now,
yeah.
So we have a bipartisan support.
We appreciate you.
Yes. Anyways, thanks for joining us. Asma and Ron are just two members of the much larger NPR Politics Pod Squad. You'll hear them and others on the show any given day. So Asma, set the scene. We're in the convention hall way, way, way up. Where are we right now?
Yeah, we're in balcony level at the Wells Fargo Arena. Balcony level means we're kind of
straight across
from the balloons. Mm-hmm. So those red, white, and blue balloons you'll see
float down on Thursday.
Yeah,
but we're sort of dead center to the stage. The stage where, you know, Bernie Sanders, Michelle Obama, and many others spoke tonight.
Yeah, and you know, so the big story today was Bernie Sanders and Bernie Sanders supporters. This whole day was this really tense dance. You know, how much unity would there be after the DNC chair, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, had to actually resign over all these hacked emails that showed the DNC wasn't operating impartially during the primaries. And the emails say a lot of things, right?
Yes, they do. But let's remember that before the email scandal began, many people had already gotten in vans all over the country and headed this way. People had started out in Seattle a week ago before they'd ever heard of these emails, and with no thought that Debbie Wasserman Schultz would have been exposed as having run this shop that was putting a thumb on the scales through the primaries, even though, of course, most people already suspected that and had seen plenty of evidence of it. And so they made the commitment to come here, and they got pretty excited about coming here and supporting Bernie Sanders and not supporting Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And that's two different things. Well before they knew about the emails.
Well, Ron, doesn't it kind of confirm people's suspicions? I heard that from a few Bernie Sanders delegates who said, you know, maybe we had thought that such, you know, sort of behind-the-scenes action was going on, but those leaked emails kind of confirmed their suspicions, they told me.
I frankly thought, I was not surprised that there were those kinds of conversations going on about how can we undercut Bernie Sanders, because it was clear that Debbie Wasserman Schultz was much more in favor of Hillary Clinton, didn't have any use for Bernie Sanders, thought of him as a non-Democrat. She's the chairman of the Democratic National Committee, and her job is to pick a Democratic nominee. She didn't think Bernie Sanders qualified.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that it isn't outrageous. It's just that I don't think very many Bernie Sanders people were surprised to hear that they were talking exactly the way they thought they were talking.
So this is the backdrop. Amidst all of this stuff, she announces that she will resign Sunday. She'll not chair the convention, and then she'll resign as chair of the DNC after the convention.
That's right.
Anyway, so we'll get to the events of the day, but let's hear the roar of the crowd, actually, when Bernie Sanders took the stage at the end of the night, just before 11 p.m. or so.
Thank you.
And I was down there during this moment. It was the longest sustained applause that I had heard all night. He had to wait about 3 minutes just to start speaking. And there were Bernie signs all over, chants and cheers of support. Bernie, 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 Bernie.
Thank you all very much.
It was as if for a minute you could believe that he had won the nomination in that room.
And I think that's a good way to put it, because for a lot of the people who came here to support him, not just the people who voted for him in the spring, but the people who really made the trip to be here, whether they're delegates or not, and many of the people here to support him are not actually voting delegates, those people believe he did win the nomination. And for them, this business about the DNC emails is just confirmation that somehow he got done dirty. He got it stolen from him. And they bring up, when you talk to them, they bring up, oh, there were all those people who weren't registered in Brooklyn, even though it turns out they were in neighborhoods that went heavily for Hillary Clinton. And there were all those people who didn't get to vote in Phoenix because there weren't enough places to vote, even though that was because the Republican legislature had cut back on the number of places there were to vote in Phoenix. It had nothing to do with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, had nothing to do with the DNC, but it's all of a piece. in the minds of Bernie Sanders supporters.
But Sanders, in his speech, does basically say that Hillary Clinton is the way to stop Trump, and he urges the entire room to support her. We have some tape of that.
We need leadership which brings our people together and makes us stronger. Not leadership which insults Latinos and Mexicans, insults Muslims and women, African Americans and veterans, and seeks to divide us up. By these measures, any objective observer will conclude that based on her ideas and her leadership, Hillary Clinton must become the next president of the United States.
And that line got rip-roaring applause in the arena, I mean, which I thought was really interesting because all night we kept hearing sort of cheers and jeers and chants of Bernie. And to me, at that moment, the cheers outweighed any sort of, you know, possible boos or folks, you know, being upset with that when you were down on the floor.
And of course, that is the consensus of this convention. Of the 1,800 Bernie Sanders delegates and the much larger number of Clinton delegates, the great majority of both groups feels that Hillary Clinton is more qualified to be president than Donald Trump. That is not in dispute here. But there is a minority of the Sanders.
A very vocal minority.
And that's the point. A highly vocal and irreconcilable minority, which is mad at Bernie now because he has sold them out. He has capitulated to the man, in this case, the woman.
Yeah. So let's get to some more of that speech from Bernie Sanders. He did say at one point that he and Hillary Clinton don't see eye to eye on everything.
It is no secret that Hillary Clinton and I disagree on a number of issues. That is what this campaign has been about. That is what democracy is about.
And he also talked about the stuff that he fought to include in the official party platform.
The Democratic Party now calls for breaking up the major financial institutions on Wall Street and the passage of a 21st century Glass-Steagall Act. It also calls for strong opposition to job-killing trade agreements like the TPP.
There were so many no TPP signs throughout the hall tonight. It's become the lingering issue of division, or one of them, right?
One has to wonder how many of the people holding up those signs know that this was one of the main things that Barack Obama wanted to accomplish in the last years of his presidency, or how many of them really understand what the Trans-Pacific Partnership is really all about. But I do understand what they do know. I do understand what they do know, which is that past trade deals from NAFTA on have resulted in some loss of jobs in some parts of the United States, in certain parts of the economy. Many of them feel that those were their jobs.
And those are, I mean, it's valid to feel that way
because
there are large swaths of the country where manufacturing has disappeared, and people say that's because of these trade deals, right?
They say that, and there is an argument to be made. It is not necessarily as open and shut as Bernie Sanders has made it sound,
or
Donald Trump, for that matter. But they can campaign against trade deals and make it stick with a certain kind of voter, and that kind of voter was here tonight and very vocal.
Yeah. And that's the thing, I was going to say, I mean, the sense that people are vocal to me is so interesting because I spent a lot of time on the floor tonight, and I did speak to some Bernie Sanders supporters who said to me, you know, we don't agree with the booing and the heckling, and that, you know, one young woman from Wisconsin said she wants to hear the speeches, and she's like, I didn't come here as, you know, a Hillary Clinton supporter per se, but she intends to vote for whoever is the Democratic nominee. You know, I don't know. Part of me also wonders how much of this is generational, which we have talked about ad nauseum this campaign season, but I was in the stands kind of around the California delegation area, and I happened to...
They were the most rowdy tonight.
Yeah, and I happened to walk into an extremely heated debate between a Bernie Sanders delegate and a Hillary Clinton delegate.
I'm here to make sure that the Democratic Party is as progressive as it possibly can be, in whatever form or fashion that means.
My point is that was said just like a 25-year-old would say it. I lived through what happened when Robert Kennedy was killed.
She was trying to warn this 25-year-old delegate that you don't know I lived through that era when we elected a very, or nominated a very super liberal
person. But you know what makes
person.
A young person really, really mad? When you say, you don't know, I lived through it.
Yes, and I know that I have battled the temptation to say that many times.
Because if Donald Trump ends up there because you don't take responsibility for the other person.
I'm asking you a question straight up. I mean, do you have any desire, or would you ever support Donald Trump if that's
no. Would I ever support Donald Trump? No, because I'm not a racist or a bigot.
Whoa. Here's one
being
thing.
Pointed.
Here's one thing I will never do, or I've stopped doing, thank goodness, arguing with strangers. If I don't know you, and you're not close to me.
But they were members of the
delegation. They're not family.
Well, and we try to make sure that there are plenty of people that know you that are your good, close friends that you can argue with.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So I think the idea that she was insinuating that you're going to be the cause of a Donald Trump victory was really offensive.
So do these two people leave this convention Thursday night at 12 midnight united? Ron's mouthing no.
I don't think those two people.
Not those two.
But many of the rest of the thousands of delegates here. There are thousands of delegates here.
More than the RNC, right?
Oh, yes, substantially more. And they also have more alternates. And all of these people are in the hall. And that means that you have a wide swath of the politically involved and perhaps hyper-involved Americans present in this room, and therefore you're going to have a certain kind of energy. And I don't think that every pair of arguing Hillary and Bernie people are ever going to unite. But there will be many people who are at least susceptible to coming together before it's all over, depending on the behavior of the delegates between now and Thursday night and on the appeals and the strength of the appeals that are made for unity by the people speaking on stage.
Yeah. So one more little tidbit to mention about these emails heard around the world is that the hack itself is now being linked to the Russians. What is this, Ron? Please tell me what's going on.
I'm confused, too.
Okay, several weeks ago, the Washington Post reported that a cybersecurity firm had been hired by the DNC because they thought they were being hacked. And this cybersecurity firm had reported that, yes, indeed, they had been hacked, not by just one, but by two elements coming from elsewhere. And because of some of the markers that were left by the hackers, they were able to narrow that down and identify two groups, both of which they associate with Russia. And then what happens is WikiLeaks, which is anti-secrecy and tries to, you know, bust up people's secrecy by publishing things they'd rather keep secret, got hold of these emails somehow. And so was it the Russians who gave it to them? They won't say, but they don't deny it. What they say is you can't prove that.
But then there's a wrinkle, right? Because Trump has some business ties to Russia.
Many.
And one of his top aides, Paul Manafort, has even closer ties. Can you explain that?
Paul Manafort, who has made a living for a number of years now representing governments, and particularly strongman governments around the world.
Foreign governments
around the world. Particularly those that had a strongman kind of format, a very highly authoritarian government, was the man who was handling business internationally and representing Viktor Yanukovych, who was the Ukrainian leader in Kiev, who was associated with Vladimir Putin. He was, in many people's estimation, a puppet of Vladimir Putin. He was deposed a couple of years ago, and that's what started the current tension between Ukraine and Russia, because they were no longer in thrall to Moscow. Paul Manafort represented that guy.
Huh.
So that raises all kinds of questions about how Mr. Putin feels about Mr. Manafort and how Mr. Putin may feel about Mr. Trump.
Oh, my. So much.
And of course, we do not know.
We don't know.
We don't know that one of those two or both of those Russian hackers actually delivered the emails to WikiLeaks. Julian Assange, the famous leader of WikiLeaks, has said there's no proof of that. He didn't deny it. He didn't identify anyone else as the source, but he said there's no proof of that.
So there's a lot to cover there. We'll keep talking about this in podcasts in the future as we learn more. But let's go back to the convention. Today, after the very start of it, there was a musical number by Boyz II Men.
Come on!
Boyz II Men.
Just three of them, though. They did Coolie High Harmony. Fun fact, this CD, Coolie High Harmony, was my first CD ever.
Ooh. CD? That's quite famous. We used to have them on mixtape.
Wow.
What was your first CD, Ron? Oh,
but you know, but it's my first CD was a CD of something that I probably had on vinyl for 20 years. You know, but I think actually the first CD that I bought that I had not had on vinyl was a Stevie Winwood comeback attempt.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Back in the Life. You might. Some people actually bought it.
I love that one.
It was actually fairly Back in the Life. It was called.
I'm kidding.
Stevie
Wynn.
No, you don't. I understand.
I thought you didn't. I was going to try to play cool.
So, Boys to Men, just three of the four, or Boys to Old Men, I might say. Oh, sorry. Oh. They're aging.
They're native Philly.
They're Philly. They're Philly born and raised. Yeah. Anyways, after that, there was the invocation led by Dr. Cynthia Hale.
We have an opportunity, oh God, to give undeniable evidence of our commitment to justice and equality by nominating Hillary Rodham Clinton as our candidate.
And it's the first, that's the first mention of Clinton's name, and then the booze starts, and then there's chants of Bernie, Bernie, Bernie. And for like the first hour or two, the hall was just lit. Mm-hmm. Whenever you said this woman's name.
Mm-hmm. Now give us courage for the facing of this hour.
It subsided over time, but for a while it was crazy.
It was crazy at first. It really was. It was like two, you know, you were in a high school basketball game, gym, and the two sides were screaming stuff back and forth.
It's like when
the
optics
of that didn't look good. I mean, there were a number of people of color who were supporting Hillary Clinton on stage, and they were getting booed. I mean, and to be fair, you know, many, I spoke to some of these African American delegates who told me they felt like it was unfair that she had rightfully won the nomination, and the optics of that just didn't really look good, regardless of why it was happening.
You know, so after Wasserman Schultz stepped down from her role, she was replaced by Marsha Fudge, a black member of the House of Reps from Ohio, and she was being booed.
Over the...
Very loudly, and at one point she says to them,
"May I just make a point? There are many of you that do not know me in this room. But let me say to you, I intend to be fair. I want to hear the varying opinions here. I'm going to be respectful of you, and I want you to be respectful of me."
She was basically arguing for calm in the room. Over the next few hours, things did calm down, and there was kind of a turning point that I saw. Minnesota Senator Al Franken came out with the comedian Sarah Silverman, and she had been a strong Bernie supporter. So they introduced themselves to talk about who they supported in the primaries.
"I'm Senator Al Franken, and this past year, I've been hashtag I'm with her.
And I'm Sarah Silverman, and this past year, I've been feeling the burn."
And then Silverman basically took some shots at Trump.
"This Democratic primary was exemplary. No name calling, no comments about the size of candidates' hands or ethnicity or how much they sweat or if they go to the bathroom. Inside secret, they do. That stuff is for third graders. Come on. That's like major Arrested Development stuff. That's I'm still emotionally four and calling people names from my gold-encrusted sandbox because I was given money instead of human touch or coping tools stuff."
And then she basically made the case for Hillary Clinton.
"Come on. She's like the only person ever to be overqualified for a job as the president. So I tell you this, I will vote for Hillary with gusto."
People are still chanting and booing and saying, "Bernie, Bernie, Bernie." But then she's like,
"The Bernie, can I just say, to the Bernie or bust people, you're being ridiculous."
Then the Hillary supporters kind of shouted down the Bernie supporters. It was just, ugh.
People have forgotten that conventions were meant to be fractious and contentious and to eventually reach agreement on a nominee. It's been a long time, but there was one convention that went 17 days.
But I feel like in all my lifetime, they feel like these orchestrated affairs that are supposed to be to, you know, sort of fancy shindigs to crown the nominee.
Like, but that,
it's been all our lifetime, though,
right? It really started.
We're young.
It started a little bit in the 70s, and then it got really kind of baroque in the 80s and 90s, where it just got so scripted and so predictable and so orchestrated. There was really no reason to do it except as free advertising for the candidate. So, of course, the parties wanted to have four nights of free advertising. Yeah. And so they did it. And we, of course, the media, just hooked and went right along with them and gave them all the free advertising. Yeah. And it really was absurd.
Yeah. You know, so anyways, after that moment, we start to hear some speeches that begin to kind of bring the crowd together. We heard from Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey. Some thought he might have been Clinton's running mate. Anyway, he gave a speech that the crowd here really, really liked. And for the first time, they came together around it seemed. And he quoted Maya Angelou.
When Trump spews insulting and demeaning words about our fellow Americans, I think of that poem by Maya Angelou. Y'all know it. You know how it begins. You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still, like dust, I rise. Well, y'all know it. Y'all know it.
Well, it's in reference to the general idea of America being an egalitarian society, and that when we work together, we can accomplish anything, whether it's winning World War II.
We will rise. This is our history.
Or whether it's achieving greater equality.
We will rise. My fellow Americans.
Between different kinds of people in the country. Or,
my fellow Americans.
To go back to the Civil War, eliminating slavery.
We will rise.
So the way that he did it, of course, I think, owes a lot to the dynamic of the black church and the way preachers in the black church will speak to the congregation will speak back. And a kind of energy happens that is really quite transcendent.
Let us declare so that generations yet unborn can hear us. We are the United States of America. Our best days are ahead of us. And together with Hillary Clinton as our president, America, we will rise. God bless America. Let us rise together. God bless America.
So let's talk about another speech that sought to unify from First Lady Michelle Obama, who actually made history tonight. She was the first First Lady to ever have her own words heard at both major parties' conventions in the same year.
Oh, my God.
Thought about that one on that, guys.
Yes, I guess that's true.
Man.
I guess that's true.
Man.
Keep that in.
It was an extraordinary speech. I would say no one would have predicted necessarily that on a night when Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren were both speaking. Elizabeth Warren was the keynoter, and we haven't talked much about her. But on such a night, and Cory Booker as well, all of whom are quite reputed as speakers, that a person who is actually not a politician would give the most affecting and unifying and powerful speech.
Yeah.
But she gives viral videos. I mean, this was the story I did on ATC, is that she was the reluctant political spouse who has now become this pop culture icon.
Yeah, you said ATC. Some folks might not know what that is.
All things considered.
You should listen to that show. It's on the radio. Anyways, so she's talking, and she begins to discuss her daughters and about the hate in our politics. And she basically discusses going into the White House with her husband, knowing how much it would affect Sasha and Malia, her daughters.
And how well we managed this experience could truly make or break them. That is what Barack and I think about every day as we try to guide and protect our girls through the challenges of this unusual life in the spotlight. How we urge them to ignore those who question their father's citizenship or faith. How we insist that the hateful language they hear from public figures on TV does not represent the true spirit of this country. How we explain that when someone is cruel or acts like a bully, you don't stoop to their level. No, our motto is, when they go low, we go high.
So the crowd's loving this. She goes on to say that the election is about shaping the world that kids will grow up in for the next 4 or 8 years. She also made the case that Hillary Clinton got on board with her husband 8 years ago, you know, even though she lost.
And when she didn't win the nomination 8 years ago, she didn't get angry or disillusioned. Hillary did not pack up and go home. Because as a true public servant, Hillary knows that this is so much bigger than her own desires and disappointments.
And so the biggest moment of this speech seemed to be when she compared the historic nature of Clinton's run as a woman to her family. She talked about being the first black family in the White House, a house built by slaves.
Built by slaves.
And how much that meant. And then she talks about what Hillary Clinton could mean to her daughters. And she got pretty choked up here.
I wake up every morning in a house that was built by slaves. And I watch my daughters, two beautiful, intelligent black young women, playing with their dogs on the White House lawn. And because of Hillary Clinton, my daughters and all our sons and daughters now take for granted that a woman can be president of the United States.
When you hear that crack in her voice, you're kind of like, what Democrat in this room is going to say no to that?
She was the unifier. I mean, in my mind, she was by far the most electrifying speaker of the night. I was on the floor, and when she came out, all you saw were these little purple placards of Michelle bouncing up and down. I had two guys behind me who, in the middle of her speech, started talking about how they feel like, you know, why doesn't she run for president? And the guy next to him goes, yeah, that's what I think. She should run for president. I mean, there was so much enthusiasm behind her that, as much as we talked about this night being about Bernie, I think what Michelle Obama did tonight is kind of what Bill Clinton did for Barack Obama 4 years ago.
4 years ago, and as many of the people in the party who were well-established figures in 2008 came out and did in that year, Teddy Kennedy and others came out and said, we are investing the traditions and the legacy of the Democratic Party and its idealism in this new young man, Barack Obama, and join us. And that was very powerful stuff. Some of it happened during the primaries in 2008, but a lot of it happened at that convention, which was an enormously powerful convention in Denver, Colorado, which people who have been to a lot of these things, I think oftentimes say was the most affecting convention they've ever seen.
Yeah. You know, there was another speech that was deemed the keynote, but it was not the most energetic of the night, talking about Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren.
Sanders kind of soul sister in many ways, but she was, I mean,
never heard
she
that
was,
before.
No, she is, they're ideological sisters, like brother and sister, you know, she was, if you hear her talk about TPP or income inequality or higher minimum wage, I mean, they are ideologically so similar. And I've seen Elizabeth Warren before. I saw her in Cincinnati with Hillary Clinton at their big debut together. This was not the same Elizabeth Warren I saw then. I don't know if it was the jeers that were troubling her or what.
Donald Trump knows that the American people are angry, a fact so obvious he can see it from the top of the Trump Tower.
So you hear her getting booed throughout. So
they're just droning.
He and he alone can fix the rigged system.
Folks were either yelling long boos or like yelling no and just holding the no.
Was it to distract her?
I think so. Okay. Some folks from California were yelling Goldman Sachs, Goldman Sachs.
At Elizabeth Warren.
Yes.
Who has been, if anyone, has been the scourge of Wall Street in the last five, six, eight years. She is the one.
There were other folks that were yelling, we trusted you. We trusted you. And this was from all throughout the hall. She got, I won't say the worst of it, but she got the widest array of things yelled at her.
I think that that tells you a little bit about what we're dealing with here in terms of the hardest core of the resistors, the people who say, never Hillary.
My big question is, given what happened tonight, do we see more of the jeering and the booing and the yelling tomorrow? Or have folks gotten out of their system? Did having Bernie do what he did tonight kind of soothe those fears? But I have to note also, Bernie sent some messages and some texts and some emails to supporters today saying, don't do this.
He sent a very formal letter to every delegate saying, this is hurting our cause. This is hurting progressive interest. This is giving a misimpression of what this movement has been about. And please stop. We'll see if that has an effect.
So what do we expect tomorrow, Asma?
So yeah, tomorrow Bill Clinton will speak, as well as the mothers of the movement, who are a group of moms who've lost their kids to violence, and some of them specifically to police violence. And I think what we'll be really keen to see tomorrow is how the stage and how the group, how Democrats talk about law enforcement, right? I mean, I think that throughout the Republican convention, we constantly heard about Blue Lives Matter, as
and
if
all
that was
lives matter.
Diametrically opposed to Black Lives Matter. What I think will be interesting to see from Democrats is if they try to present a unified front of Blue Lives and Black Lives Matter throughout this convention week. Tomorrow also will be the roll call. So, I mean, Ron, you can probably explain this process better than me, but it'll I think that we will see some sort of Bernie chatter again, because we'll have both Bernie and Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton supporters.
The roll call is when everybody gets to have their say, and it goes state by state. So if you're in a relatively small state, you might actually get to feel as though you heard your own personal vote called out at the convention floor, which is usually accompanied by a certain amount of, you know, happy horse feathers about what a great state Oklahoma is and what a great state California and New York and Minnesota, and everybody has a little something to say. And that oftentimes is the point at which everybody sort of gets it off their chest. Everybody sort of says, okay, now we've done it. We've come to be delegates and vote. We voted. We did the count. And you know what? It turns out just the way everybody knew it would turn out.
So we'll be here all week just for you guys. But that's enough for today. Thanks for writing us with your questions and your feedback at nprpolitics@npr.org. By the way, if you are new to our show, go check out some past episodes. I recommend very highly the musicals and politics episode, because you get to hear Ron Elving and Bob Mondello sing. It's really quite a treat.
Laughing at your own singing.
You have a voice, man.
It's the thing to do.
So it's a few episodes back in your feed. Check it out. You'll love it. Also, be sure to listen to NPR on your actual physical radio for more of our coverage of politics and the campaign all week long. I'm Sam Sanders, campaign reporter.
I'm Asma Khalid. I cover demographics in the campaign.
And I'm Ron Elving, editor, correspondent, vocalist.
Sing a little bit of this album you mentioned. Steve Winwood.
I really don't think that's a good album.
I still don't know what that was.
I thought you did.
Come on, you guys have never heard of Steve Winwood.
Huh? I thought you knew. So I was trying to go play Steve.
Stevie Winwood was 17.
This has to be the outtake.